Welcome to Life and Lattes with Paula, Andy, and Lisa. Three friends, one table, and you. Sit down and let's get three cups deep.
Good morning. Thank you for being with us on Life and Lattes. This is your moment to sip your coffee slowly and just join our table, chime in wherever you want to, and be part of the conversation. Today is such a stunning topic. We're talking friends, we're talking adult friendships, and how much they nurture us and how important they are, and do we actually give them enough time and enough credit for how important they are in our lives? And that is coming up later in Three Cups Deep. Good morning, Andy. Good morning, Lisa. Joining us, as always, from Ranana. How's it? How's it going?
Good morning, Paulie.
Good morning.
So I'm so blessed because I'm sitting here with two very dear friends. One is one of my oldest friends, and one is officially my newest friend. Lisa, I met through Andy and, you know, to do the show together. And Andy, I have known since I met her on the first day of my new school when I moved to Yeshiva College at age 11, and the darling Linda Levy introduced us in the parking lot, and she said, you guys are going to be best friends. And Andy took my arm, took me under her wing, and the rest, as they say, is history. One of my oldest friends. So absolutely appropriate to be doing the topic today. But we're going to start off first with our single shot, and my single shot is so boring, but it's very interesting to me. It's so interesting to me. I'm drinking a smoothie and I've put chia seeds in it. And that is actually a result of the influence of my dear friends in my life, because I started on these protein shakes about 2 months ago and I was just too lazy to add anything to them. I was just having the protein and the water, just like lugging it down, disgusting, every morning. And then the girls were like, no, you should totally add in dates. You should totally add in chia seeds. You should totally. And that's what I've done. Like slowly but surely.
Yogurt.
I'm telling you, I feel like I'm a very late adopter. I'm very like late to the party in all of these trends. Smoothies, protein smoothies with all of chia seeds have been around for a long time. But for me, it always takes...
One of the many benefits, Paula, of having friends in your life.
That's exactly, because I realize I'm the kind of person, I don't take on things from like a news story or like a Facebook post. But if I know someone and it has that level of trust, then I'm like, oh, okay, well, they say it, then it actually must be true. I'll do it. Yeah. So that's my single shot.
It's formally endorsed.
Or
alternatively, we just got it from some Instagram post and have adopted.
And that's fine because you adopted it and then you believe in it. And then when you tell me, then I trust it. But I have two single shots today, so let's call it a double shot, is I have read a book. Yes, it's not only Andy, who's every week coming with a new book. Hey, granted, it's taken me the whole year. And it is called ADHD is Awesome. So maybe that's why it took me a year, 6 months to read it. But I'll tell you about it after the break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So yes, so my extra single shot, my double shot today was that I'd read, finally finished reading a book. ADHD is Awesome. Lisa, what?
You cut out for a second on us, but you're back.
Okay, good. So yes, I read this book finally, and the best thing about this book is that it's full color. It's an adult book that every page is full color with like lots of colors.
Maybe I need that book.
It is such a good book.
I think my ADHD has gone out of whack. It's out of whack and out to lunch.
I think I've developed ADHD at 46, or brain fog or whatever, distractibility / whatever it is. It's written by Penn and Kim Holderness, and they have like a social media page, the Holderness family.
Awesome.
Such adorable content.
So
I absolutely love their content.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's really just, you know, having ADHD people in my life, it gave me such real insight into what it must be like to be them. And also so validating for the caretakers that are really like kind of trying to hold it together and not lose their temper every day, for at people that really are doing their best and honestly can't do certain things, like park where you ask them to park on a very daily basis, which is happens with my husband. Literally, we have a driveway, and all he has to do is park further up the driveway, then it makes it easier for me to reverse and drive out. Every single day, I'm like, please park mindfully. Please park mindfully. Anyway.
But that's because an ADHD person can't judge space very well. Do
oh,
you know
is that?
That
it?
Yeah, there's a spatial issue, accounts for why many women who are ADHD are not magnificent drivers. I'm not going to call myself a bad driver. I'm just going to say we're not magnificent.
And parallel parking is just an absolute out of the question.
No. Weirdly enough, I can parallel park.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very spatial.
I can parallel park, and it's the only thing I do well in the car.
Well, I failed my driver's license badly parallel parking, so yeah.
I nearly killed the guy who was testing me. How about that? In fact, when we were driving, it was so close. As we were exiting the driving test, I literally nearly went into another car, and the guy sitting next to me, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the radio, but he went, oh, Jesus Christ.
And you still passed.
Moment, I realized, oops, I think I have failed this one.
And I bet you Andy passed it first time. She did.
Yep.
That's how Andy rolls. Okay, but you got to have friends like that. Friends who inspire you. Friends.
You recommended a book to me once on, I don't know what it's called, something about the upside of anxiety or the positive side of being anxious.
Yes, David Rosmarin. Yes.
And he has got an entire chapter where he says he would much rather get in a car with an anxious driver than an overly confident driver.
Oh, very true, hey?
There's a very cool chapter about that. It just made me connect all those dots.
So I love how I read like a few social posts by David Rosmarin, recommend him to Andy, and then she goes and buys the book and reads it. So that's
what friends are for.
Yeah, that's us in a nutshell. Who's got a single shot for us today?
I have one that shocked Lisa, where we found out yesterday. So up until yesterday, you could order without paying tax, up to $130 from overseas. Very cool stuff. And we're very good at online shopping.
That's quite a lot of money, Rands. That's actually a lot. You got a lot of stuff.
Yesterday, they slashed it down to $75, which kind of got every Israeli online shopper in a bit of a tiz. But 5 seconds later, on breaking news, Israelis can now order direct from Primark. Online.
What is
which
that?
Which is huge. Primark is a store in Europe that's literally like across Europe where Israelis basically get on a plane just to go to Primark.
Oh, wow.
Literally. Yes. And if you go to like Oxford Street in London or any of the main European cities, the lines and the queues outside Primark start an hour before the store even opens.
Joking.
The prices are insane. And Israelis have literally nailed the market.
So are you saying that you can order up to $75 worth of stuff from Primark at a time?
Without paying tax.
Okay.
So who knew that Life and Lattes is now a public service announcement place?
It always will be. It always will be. You will get the juice here on 5FM.
I'm so happy to be the bearer of good news
this
morning.
That's wonderful. I must actually look at that. But nothing on earth would induce me to stand outside a store for an hour. No. It's never going to happen. I can't even go into a mall and stand inside of a store where you don't have to wait. I hate malls. I hate shopping.
I have no patience.
Yeah.
I have no patience at all. None.
So now you can just order direct to your door. What a win. Okay, that's fascinating. And Lise, have you got a single shot for us?
Am I espressoing or am I single shotting? I'm so confused.
I'm also confused. You're right. You know what? You are absolutely right.
It's espresso, right?
And it's not espresso.
Oh my God, we're going to get feedback
espresso.
That we need to order. Okay.
We can espresso ourselves and we're our single shot.
So my espresso yourself or single shot, we're getting confused because we're elderly and young all at the same time. I actually had the wedding of a good friend this week, which sounds benign, except it's one of those friends, you know, where you've seen their kids grow up and like you've watched this little boy grow and now he's getting married. And, I think after, you know, there's the value of a simcha has suddenly taken on such epic proportion in our lives right now. And it was so nice to just be at like a real celebration and to watch, you know, like a family who's been a part of your life for forever, just in a great moment. And their son has been in and out of war for 2.5 years. And so his whole army, Tsevet, you know, the whole team was there. And to watch all these boys, it was for many of them the first time they'd ever been at any kind of a religious wedding. And it was like just in between all this crazy to finally just, you know, to be aware that we've become people who can clock the value of being joyful. And it was like, ah, that's a privilege, because yeah. I think so often it would just be like joy is an expected place to be at. But when joy actually feels like something you have to savor, it really is quite tremendous. So I was
that sounds meaningful. Wow, that sounds so beautiful. And it's actually making me think of this beautiful teaching I once heard so many years ago. There's a very famous mission that says, who is rich? Someone who is happy with his lot. And I once heard a beautiful interpretation that someone who can be happy with his lot, as in his friend's lot, someone who can truly rejoice for someone else's joy, that is a person, that is a wealthy person, because you're not limited to your own blessings, and you're not limited to your own good, you know, great day that you've had or brocha that you've had, but you can actually just truly, like, you know, breathe in that joy and just feel such excitement and happiness for someone else. And that is
That's so beautiful.
It's such a beautiful. Interesting.
Yeah, you know, Simon Sinek, in one of his friendship podcasts on leadership, said something so interesting. He said, you know, sometimes we think of our friendships as the people we can call when we're in a bind or we're stuck or we need help or we're in trouble or we're sad. But he says an interesting reframe to really profile your best friendships, your most wow friendships, are the ones you can actually call and say, this amazing thing just happened to me, and know they will be happy for you.
Yes.
Know they want to share in that joy. Know they want to celebrate you. And I remember hearing that and really thinking about that. You know, it's one thing, and I'm not minimizing this by any means. I'm so grateful for everyone who's ever been there for me in a hard time. But I'm saying, like, there is something to be said for the friend you can call and say, I did something really amazing, or I won something, or I'm proud of something.
And there's zero envy
for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's
a
Jewish word for that, vergin. Vergin is a Yiddish word, which means you literally, you just get geschmack, you just get joy. You wish them well, you get joy out of their happiness, as opposed to...
And there's no translation for it.
I used to
teach a social skills group to little girls, and I really took this on with my own kids. And I'd often say to them, what do you think makes a good friend? And people would say, someone you can trust, someone who shows up, someone ever. And I don't have research to back this up. I don't. But I have come wholeheartedly to believe that there are two things that make a really good friend. And one of them is, you know, you've got a good friend when they want good for you. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're experiencing good, but also that they want you to have good and they're happy for you.
Yeah.
And the second is that when you're not, you know, that friend, when you're not in the room, he'll fight for you.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think that's a kind of like reframe, as opposed to, it's easy. It's not easy, but we tend to show up in the hard and to become people who show up in the good.
Beautiful. We're going to take a break.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to Chai FM. So we are on Life and Lattes, and I hope you're listening, and I hope that you are going to share with us what is important to you, what quality is important to you in a friend. You know, we were just saying that, you know, you often think, well, someone is really going to be there for you in the hard times, but really, you do want someone who's going to be happy for you in the good times, someone who's going to, you know, get as much joy out of your joy as they would about their own. And I don't think that's so easy, girls. I don't. I remember many years ago, I had a friend, particularly wealthy friend, and, you know, we had this couch, this very well-loved couch, and they moved into a new home, and they had couches like for Africa. They had like a lounge suite, like in every, like they had about six lounge suites. And I was like desperately just trying to get a new one new lounge suite. And I didn't like that feeling of like, I don't know how happy I was for her about six lounge suites. And I think it's, I think I was thinking about this in the break. Maybe it's when you see a friend who's also struggled for something and then they get that thing, you know, it's so easy to be happy for them. But if you are also struggling for that thing, I don't know if it's so easy. And it's a challenge.
And I think it can be many things. It doesn't have to be only what we're struggling with. I think it can also just be, you know, like joy for someone else comes from our own sense of wholeness.
Absolutely. You know? That's it.
And when we're not in wholeness about something, it's hard. And the truth is, it's never really about them. It's never about them having more or less, whatever. It's you being able to hold your own worthiness and your own wholeness. And from there, you know, we get to genuinely feel good for other people. But I just think that's our own transformation. And sometimes we make it about them. And really, it's just about how big are we allowed to grow. And the truth is, we're allowed to grow very big if we give ourselves permission.
That was very deep. It seems to me.
I am very deep, Paula.
You are very deep, but you're also very funny. So it's a very good mix. But we are three cups deep into friendship. And it's such a critical thing in our lives. Thank God. You know, my sisters are my best friends. I have a lot of sisters, girls. I have four sisters. And my sisters are my best friends. And I do have very good friends. But, you know, I think I have less than other people. My mother, shame, she's actually in hospital. She just had a procedure. And so there was a little health update group with, I think it was 40 people, like good friends that really want to know, like on a daily basis, like how she's feeling and what she needs and whatever. And I'm not convinced I would have, you know, 40 good friends like who, you know, like would care day to day. Do you know what I'm saying? And my mom is that. She's like really is just, she invests so much in her friendships and she always has. And it's taken me a long time. It's taken me till my 40s to realize what friendship takes, because at school, I think, you know, it was very easy, and especially if you have an Andy in your life who does a lot of the heavy lifting of friendships, the reaching out, the catching up, the checking in, you know, you can kind of rest on your laurels because the other person is reaching out and making sure that you're still connected. And after school and later on in life, you know, you're not going to be connected to people if they are not that kind of person, if you're not that kind of person. Someone's going to have to do that.
I think that, Paul, that's very insightful. And I think that in school or when we're kids, a lot of our friendships are built around proximity. And so you're friends with your schoolmates and you're friends with your dance crew or your sports team. And as you get older, your friendships are built far more on intention and choice.
Exactly.
And not just on proximity. And that means that your friends are more chosen now. You know, when you have these insights and these realizations, it's because you don't have to be friends with people. You are choosing to be friends with people.
Yeah, but it's actually a double-edged sword because of the lack of proximity when you're older, it's harder to make friends. It's harder to have the frequency of encounters and casual interactions that then lead to, you know, and especially if you don't have Shabbos, you know, you don't have a community, you don't have people you're inviting over. I just don't know, how do you make friends when you're older because you don't have that proximity and the frequency.
And since Corona, if you look at the research, there is something now called a friendship recession, and the statistics are shocking. Yes, there's something called a friendship recession if you look at the research, and people are spending less time with people since COVID. It started around 1990, but it's changed a lot.
I do wonder if it's a recession or if there was also a reset, and maybe it was needed, you know, depending on your personality.
Yeah.
But I think some people in some ways needed permission. Some of us just took it, but some people needed permission to, in some ways, cull from their lives the things that didn't, and the people that not didn't serve them, but didn't fill them, you know. A while ago, we had like two Shabbat meals, and both my husband and I, the one, I don't know, it was just like, you know, one of those meals where you just like are not relating. And then the next meal where you just like leave and go, ugh, whatever. And like my husband said, we went for a walk, Moshe Shabbos, and he turned around and I said, you know, I think at this stage of my life, I just want to be around people who bring me up, you know, or people who enlighten something, or whose value systems I just go, yes. And the people that don't do that, maybe I don't, the time that we have is so limited. Like maybe I just don't want to give that to people anymore. And there is something. So I don't know. Is it a recession? Maybe. Like certainly our social skills.
Well, there's a loneliness epidemic as well, which is very real. We can't ignore that. And at the same time, one of the key factors in friendship is that it's additive.
Right.
So friendships are meant to add value or add joy. So your joy is multiplied when you share it with your friends. And, you know, there is that additive value. And if that's not happening, you know, it all rests on like a basic need for belonging. Why are friendships so important? They're not luxuries. They're absolute necessities for joyfulness and for meaning and for happiness. And all happiness research will show that your meaningful connections in your life, and very much your friendships, because they're not romantic and they're not familial and they're not work-based, they're in their own exclusive category, and that makes them exceptionally valuable.
But where do you have the time for this in Israel? Because, I mean, in South Africa, you know, everyone
Sundays.
Is... yeah, we have Sundays. We have... You know, I think we have a lot more free time. We have help at home. And, you know, going for coffees is a very big part of like sort of life. But where do you actually, how do you do that in Israel? How do you make time for your friendships when you are living at such a pace?
I think I've become a color, not of people in, I cut you off and out. I don't think there's any, it's a lot of energy to cut someone out your life. But I do think, I mean, I often joke, I'm with you, Paul. I have two sisters. And like, I mean, maybe that's been true since I was little, that when you have sisters who you're close to, like in some ways,
they are your best built-in besties.
Yeah, you just have built-in besties. So it always makes it easier. But I do think that there's been something very conscious in me as I've got older to say, you know what? I really want to be conscious about where I put my energies. And not to say that all friendships failed or let you down. You know, like sometimes friendships do not run their course. They were really successful for what they were. And then you changed
organic change. Evolution. Okay. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be from Breugers or from...
it doesn't have to be a proper conflict. It can just dissolve.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we have such a tendency to see that when things end that it's always a failure or like something happened, as opposed to we change and evolve, and that's okay.
But I think it can be hurtful for the if it's not mutual. You know, the one person's still very into the friendship and then the other person is just like, this is not really, just it's not adding anything to my life. I've got a beautiful WhatsApp here from Andre. I love your lounge suite honesty. Very cool and human. Thank you. That's exactly what our show is. It's human. It's real. It's three cups deep. It's, you know, it's just being, yeah, we sometimes forget that we're on air and, forget the filter. But
I think, Paulie, I think that also just following what Lise was saying as well, like, I think that friendships have to be prioritized more if they do matter. And so we can't necessarily just leave them up to chance. You know, your friendships don't disappear because you stop caring or stop loving someone. They disappear because that effort or that conscious, deliberate intention to connect or spend time with one another isn't happening. And that might also be just an invitation for all of us to just think about that.
You know, I had such a friend of mine in Australia really gave it to me on the head a few years ago.
It's worth it.
And she was totally right, but it was so hard for me. You know, being part of the ADHD club often means that you're not a great connector because you jump out of focus so easily. Mm. And because I've lived in four different countries, I'm not a great connector, which is really hard, actually. And one of my best friends from Australia, it was my daughter's bat mitzvah a few years ago. And her bat mitzvah had come on the heels of so many things. I'd gone to Ukraine for a war with Hatzalah and come back and put this, and before that, I'd traveled to Australia very quickly. She wasn't there because a friend of mine had passed away. It was so crazy. And then I came back and I was whipping together this bat mitzvah in my garden. It was like such a low-key non-event. It was lovely, but it was like so last minute. I didn't think much of it and I didn't tell her about it. And she came to me, she was so hurt. And she said to me, Lisa, we have been best friends since we are 16 years old. How could you not tell me about your daughter's bat mitzvah? And I was like, what? And she was like, that's not what friends do. She said, you can't just cut me out. And she was so right. And I was so not in place, but it hadn't even occurred. And I think like sometimes there's that fine line of like, remembering to connect and show up. Mm. And then there's that fine line of grace. Mm. And I also, she was so right. And at the same time, it was so wounding because I so needed grace and she was upset, you know? And it's this dance of like, how do you like remember to connect and how do you remember when to let it go?
Yeah, but it does take courage that she raised it with you because some people, you know, they'll just have the furibble and they'll be like, well, they didn't. And, you know, and that's just so unnecessary to have a friendship where you can talk about these things and you can be okay and you can explain things were so mad. And the bat mitzvah to us is not maybe what you think of a bat mitzvah in Australia where, you know, it's you go big or go home kind of thing. It's, you know, it wasn't. So it's so important to be able to have those conversations. And
I think it says a lot about your friendship as well.
Yeah,
that
it really does. But I think I you know, the friendships that I have really become so much more meaningful as I've got older. You know, I think when I was younger, I don't know why, but you kind of have this impression that people are, I don't know, people are just there's another person, here's another person. But as you get older, you realize how utterly unique, how utterly irreplaceable each human being is. Literally never to be repeated and totally unique worldview, totally unique sense of humor, totally unique interests. It's mind-boggling how absolutely unique and precious each person is. And so you treat friendships as much less disposable and you treat people as far more valuable. Well, at least me personally.
I think also maybe because I moved at certain ages in my life, what I have come to notice is there's something about childhood friendships that no one can quite explain, but I certainly know it with my friends from primary school or even, you know, high school. Mm. There's a certain knowing. You know, we all talk about ADHD when you just learnt about it. I spoke to one of my oldest friends. She said, really, Lisa, you just discovered that? Like, we've joked about you since you were 10 years old, you know? It was like, oh, really? You all diagnosed me? But there was such a no need to explain, or you knew what each other's parents were like, or, you know, there's that. And then there's also a value about adult friendships, which are those women who walked into your life at a much older age. And I've had the privilege of meeting those two who just feel like soul sisters. You know, a friend of mine walked into my life 5 or 6 years ago, and I was like, I have known you for lifetimes, you know? Like, and it's a different friendship, but there's such a privilege to say, like, the different weight.
But I think that's the beauty of friendship as well, where you never are limited by what could surprise you or what that capacity is, because somebody that you've never met before could become your closest friend in an hour. You are going to meet someone who you've never met before, who's going to walk into your life, and there's just a connection and a click, and they could become someone that is so meaningful to you and so important to you, and they've never known you. an hour ago.
I know. I actually have this new friend.
It's remarkable that quality of what friendship is that there's always that potential.
There is. The potential for connection and just synergy and someone who just gets you that you literally never knew they existed. And then you
can't imagine how was your life without them.
Yeah. I have this other new friend. It was such a stunning thing what they did. I went on a Shabbaton. It's called Neshei Chabad, and they do one every 2 years. And the last one, I don't know if it was last year. I think it was last year. And on the Shabbaton, they gave out coffee vouchers. And they said, go for coffee with someone new that you've met on this Shabbaton. And we actually did. Me and this one girl went for coffee. And she's also one of my newest friends, and I adore her. She's just hilarious. And I just, I needed that push. And I was never the person who would be like, let's go for coffee. Never. Like, I just had never built that muscle. And now I'm a huge, huge believer in doing that. I've got one more WhatsApp here from Karen. Hey, guys, off to find coffee and friends in Jerusalem. Amazing. So cool. Gorgeous here. Having my best time. Thank you. She said that's what happens here in Israel. Not sure exactly what she means by that's what happens here in Israel, but you can tell us.
You go for coffee or you meet random people?
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe you just meet just soul sisters, just. We're gonna pick it up after the break.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome back to Life and Lattes. And Karen has just clarified what she means. It's so fun WhatsApping a listener that I have no idea who she is. She's in Israel and just fantastic. She said, that's what happens here in Israel, meeting new friends. It's unbelievable finding new friends. And it really is. It really, really is. So,
we always forget, the core of the human condition is that we are totally wired for connection.
We're social animals.
Literally. And I think we forget that to take ourselves out of connection is like dying a slow death as a human being. Mm. And I also think particularly for women, while marriages matter a great deal, and we'll do a show on marriage, plug, but I think this real thing of needing female friends to just unpack life with becomes increasingly important the older we get. Mm. And I think a sense of loneliness creates so much pain in the human condition. Mm. And I think friendships are, one of the things I love is when you start looking at 12-year-old girls and they're all so insecure because, they're going through body, brain changes, hormonal changes, and they try and one out each other and female friendships. And by nature, girls are taught to be quite competitive with each other. You know, that if you're on top, it means I can't.
Why is that? I mean, we've also talked about that.
It's awful. And we can really delve into that. But what I notice is when women finally clock on, we get to cheerlead each other.
It's the best.
It is transformative, you know, because, I think the world would be a wonderful place if girls ran the world. But because I think when women push each other up instead of trying to elbow each other out the way, that sense of worthiness and abundance just flows and you get more and more and more of the great stuff. And I wish that more mothers were teaching their girls to pull their friends up rather than to pull them apart.
So true. But I was having a thought when you were talking about, about having friends. I've actually lost my train of thought now. Okay, carry on. I'll come back to that. What were you saying before we were talking about how competitive girls are?
Yeah, it's like, we get invested in specialness, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to think my kid is so special. Mm. But the inherent message when we try and invest in specialness is if I'm special, then you can't be special. Like there's only room for one special. So when you've got kids who are going through so many changes and they're so unsettled, I mean, my worst, I'm going to actually say this on there. When I have a parent who comes into my office talking to me about their adolescent kid and says, I just want them to be confident. I'm like, are you kidding me? Your kid is getting like brand new hormones, a brand new body, and a brand new PS brain. Do you know that?
And skin that doesn't cooperate either.
Everything. Going through so much. And you want them to be confident? Like, why can't they just be?
Be
a mess. Let them be a mess.
And and feel insecure and all over the place and just hold space of saying, eventually you'll get there and you'll find your tribe and it's okay to not feel okay all the time, you know?
Yeah.
But when we're so invested that my kid has to be special and my kid has to be amazing, like we totally forget to teach them, no, no, build everyone else up. It's okay. Or she can be special and you can be special. There's room for both of you.
Mm.
You know, and to be invested in their being included and their being special, it's like a rat race.
Mm. I just remembered my thought. It's just, you know, with adult friendships, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but women need to like say, let's say, for example, 10,000 words a day, right? And men have much lower needs. They have like 5,000 words. Let's just throw out those numbers, but
that's
much
very
less.
Generous.
Yeah, that's very generous. And so I'm actually writing an article now about, it's called Grey Divorce, where people often many decades of marriage decide to call it quits. And I was interviewing someone about it and I was saying, could it be that, you know, there's so much pressure on a man or on the husband to be everything to their wife. And, you know, like men cannot, you cannot have your 10,000 words at the end of the day with your husband. He just can't deal with it. You know, he doesn't have those extra words and, you know, he's done. So you cannot, like, no one can be everything to someone.
And friends
is like
this.
Yes, friends is like that beautiful mix of so many different qualities and so many different, that feeds different parts of you. So that one person doesn't have to carry that load.
Exactly. You can have different friends for different things. And I think that's also very much connected to our attachment styles. You know, if you've got a secure attachment style, when someone doesn't reply to a message, you don't automatically freak out and go, what have I done? What's wrong? You know?
Oh, yes, like, absolutely.
There's that grace that Lisa was saying.
Yes.
You know, you offer grace because everyone's busy and everyone's overwhelmed and everyone's just
It's very hard to be in a friendship with someone with an insecure attachment style.
But if you've got insecure attachment or anxious attachment styles, that makes it a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
And then that expectation of having everyone be everything all the time is too much.
And also then, you know, you straight away become the very thing that we said defines you as a good friend, which is, can you be the person who finds the good?
Yeah.
You know, like really? And I do think when we dispel the notion that one person has to be all things. I mean, my husband's favorite joke to always say to me when I come to discuss something with him is to say, can we give this 15 minutes? Because I know you're going to talk to your sister about it for 2 hours.
I think my husband must be so grateful that I've got four sisters and he doesn't have to have all the words coming at him, you know?
Really? He is.
Yeah. So let's talk about, I think we should talk about what friendships have shaped our lives the most. And I really want to just mention, I had a very, very incredible, beautiful friend named Lisa. Lisa Mintz was, she got married, she was Lisa Cohen. She passed away at the age of 29, and she was my best friend for about 9 years. And I think she taught me, between her and Andy, they've taught me the most about what it is to be a friend. You know, I was just very much, you know, what it's like to have a friend. But they, you know, Lisa taught me what it's like to be a friend, to check in with people, to root for them, to be connected. And, just to laugh together, just have the best time. And I miss her every day, actually. She's been gone for 20 years, which is insane that I still miss her.
It's funny.
But I do.
You know, it's funny. One of the things that I think people forget, you know, we often talk about losing family members. It's actually unbelievably painful to lose a good friend.
Yeah.
And that's where you realize, you know, in some ways, friends are the family you choose. And I see it so much here now in Israel. You know, we have these young boys and girls who are losing young friends. And everyone jumps to panic with our soldiers saying, oh, my God, is it PTSD? Have they got PTSD? And I'm like, you know, sometimes a lot of PTSD looks like grief. Mm-hmm. And we so forget that what is actually also, you know, there is PTSD. But what's really happening with so many of these kids is that they're losing friends, and it's so painful.
And they're friends that are forged in, like, you know, the bonds that they must forge in the army and you know, being in the trenches together, literally.
You know, really, really trusting someone with your life.
Yeah.
You know?
They're brothers, they're sisters.
It's such a thing to me when I say, well, when your friends really become your emotional rocks or your emotional whatever it's called, or just your ride or dies, to lose a friend is really, really a deep, deep loss.
It really is. There are no words. But you carry with them with you. You carry them with you, and they become part of you, actually.
And you also get to live out some of the qualities in them that you love so much.
Exactly. Let's take a break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're listening to Life and Lattes, and we're talking friendship. And this show always goes way too quickly. And we are actually nearing the end of the hour. But we actually have a beautiful song to play for you just now. Not now, but just now. That Andy chose, and she'll tell us about why she chose that. But I think that we should also think about what it means to be a good friend, not only to have a good friend, not what qualities we look for in a friend, but what qualities we could have in ourselves. Mm. And I think trust is the biggest one. You know, you just do not want, you know, you just want to know that it's a sacred space and they're not going to be telling anyone. I think that's, for me, the biggest thing is that.
Yeah, with friendship, it has to go in the vault.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Exactly. And when you find a person like that has, you know, that you don't have to say to them, listen, please don't tell anyone, this is confidential. It is just so obvious.
It's just a given, unwritten guard rule.
It's a given,
Donna Ashworth, she writes such beautiful poetry, and she wrote something very beautiful about friendship. She said, I don't think friendships are given enough credit. We sign no contracts, we say no vows, and yet we are there for each other. For better or for worse, in sickness and in health. We laugh together in life-giving amounts. We cry together without shame. We pull each other up out of the mud again and again and again. I don't think friendships are given enough credit. Unwritten love stories, each and every one.
Oh, that is magnificent. So before we close out, I want you to percolate. Is there a friend that you could reach out to today? Because, you know, people just love to know that someone's thought of them. And, you know, it might even be someone from the past, someone that you had a beautiful connection with and that you just kind of dropped the ball because you didn't know how to stay in contact, or you were just too busy and life was too hectic. But to know that that person is precious and irreplaceable, is there someone that you could reach out to today or put a little bit more effort into these incredibly precious relationships and connections that we so need? Andy, tell us about the song we've picked for today, and then we are going to close out with that song and see you next week on Life and Lattes.
So the song we picked for today is just a gorgeous song about friendship, and it really is a shout out to three of our very best friends, to Robin and Candy and Dina, who when they flew in for my wedding, actually decided to play the song at the end of the wedding. And I remember, you know, when I told my friends that I was immigrating at the age of 19, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, this is insane. Like, you've got everything here, the most amazing friendship group and the most amazing family, and you're studying what you love and you're in a great university and, just, you know, life is beautiful. What are you doing? And my friends, as heartbroken as they were, and there were so many tears, were actually tremendously happy for me. And they were tremendously proud of my courage and my bravery to do something that was aligned with my vision and supported me. And when they flew in, that was a song that really just consolidated that moment. So a shout out to our beautiful friendships, some that have spanned literally almost 47 years, and some that have spanned 47 days.
Beautiful. See you next week on Life and Lattes.